Hello, you're listening to the Licking Cast, a Giant Bomb community podcast based off Guild Wars 2. We try to keep it on topic. My name is Thurbleton, and it's the week of August the 9th, 2013. I believe this is episode 52. Joining me today is self-confessed cynic.
I can only guarantee us being on topic for like the first couple of minutes of this show. That's all I'm giving you.
With the topic of Guild Wars 2, what we've been playing, we'll try and do a little bit of talking about MMOs, I guess.
Okay, alright, if our topic is pretty much whatever we can think of at the time, then yes, we stay on that topic quite consistently.
I mean, we stay on topic for the off-topic podcast, the Scotchcast.
That always scares me, how, like, on topic we just talk about games, and that's it. And that's great. Anyway.
We talked about ghosts last time.
And guns.
What else have we talked about on the Scotchcast, Durin?
What haven't we talked about? Also, real quickly, your intro, like, you coming in like that, I thought you were about to introduce some, like, smooth jazz.
I've been trying to nail down a good intro that, I don't know, does the community, like, keeps everyone happy as well as, I don't know. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, and I know we could do a smoother intro.
I think that...
I mean, we could, sure. But, I mean...
If only, New Brahma could do his British news voice and give just the smoothest of intros.
I wish.
My name is New Brahma. Hello.
That wasn't... What?
Perfect.
What?
That wasn't even...
British award winning.
That wasn't even... That was only the cadence. That was, nothing but the cadence.
Three armored brigades have engaged three infantry regiments in the Sophia in the Battle of Hearts of Iron 3.
That's better. That's better.
Thank you very much, Nubarama. Now with Cynic for the sports.
What? People threw balls this weekend. That's all I've got.
Balls were thrown. I don't know. Are there any basketball characters in Salty Bets games?
Matches? Oh shit!
Probably.
I assume there's a Shaq. There has to be a Shaq, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's got to be a Shaq. Why wouldn't there be?
Would you call Salty Bet a sport?
I guess for folks listening, before we talk about Guild Wars 2, I just this concept is amazing, and I almost want to see if they'll throw Guild Wars 2 matches in with this stuff for esports.
Oh, man.
Because, esports. But what is Salty Bets? I guess, Durin, if you want to try and explain, and then Cynic will help out.
Well, I forget what the – is it Mugen? Is that the term?
Mugen.
Sorry, Mugen. Okay, whatever. Mugen. It's basically
whatever
fighting game engine thing where you can kind of throw in whatever characters you want and give them whatever AI you want. So Salty Bet, basically, they just throw random characters against each other, controlled completely by scripted and sometimes broken AI.
Mm-hmm. And could you give some examples of random characters?
Right now Omega Red is fighting somebody called Alessi, who kind of looks like a hobo clown with a gun. And so basically, the viewers, before the match starts, there's red team versus blue team, and those are the two different fighters that are going to be matched up. And the viewers can bet Salty Bucks, which are basically kind of allotted to them. When you first sign up, you get 600 or something.
Fake currency,
yeah. None of this is real money. Yeah. And if you blow all of it, you'll always be left with at least $10 so you can continue betting. There is a subscription to his Twitch channel, because this is a guy that does run this, even mm-hmm. though it's all AI doing the fighting. You pay $4 a month or whatever to the subscription, and it ensures that you never go below. I think it's 600.
Yeah. But you don't have to. If you find with having 10 is
totally, right now I'm sitting at 15.
We are not endorsing his his weird job, I guess.
You know what? I am. I think it's a great thing.
Okay, 50% approval rating.
I think his channel shows the sad state of society that humanity has fallen into.
Maybe, I think, but it's fun.
We'd be better if we vanquished such a channel from existence.
What?
If people were actually paying real money, then I would absolutely agree.
Yeah.
It's the fact that it's fake money, and there's no way to do real money is the beauty of it.
Yes.
Yeah. The closest you can do to real money is you pay him $4 a month and you never go below 600 salty bucks.
Yeah.
Which that's just the sound of it is sort of ludicrous.
It's the point. Salty.
I don't know what's so ludicrous about making sure that you bet the right way so that you get out of the salt mines.
I still love that concept of just like the low tier betting is the salt mines.
No, you just
really
just like low like, again, like you start, I think I believe you start with $400. But like from what I was hearing the last time I was on here, salt mines is basically anything below like 10,000 salt bucks.
Wow. Salty bucks. Jeez.
So you got to work your way out of there.
Man.
Well, that's... I mean, if Portal 2 is any indication, salt mines are freaking vast. They go deep.
Yeah. Flux Waves actually has the highest bet for Omega Red right now. Flux Waves from the Giant Bomb community.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. He has bet 50,000 salty bucks.
Jesus. On Omega.
See how that works out for him.
Man. Well, it's ridiculous. So like
hashtag big plays.
They speak about this a bunch in the Bombcast, so we don't really need to go too much into it beyond it is awesome, and we endorse what they say, which is like, if unless you live in Australia, apparently, if you have like 8 hours straight, this is something to do with that time. It's just ridiculous. But hey.
Wait, you don't get this in Australia? What?
No, it's just
it's out of time zone.
Yeah.
It's because one guy runs this, he's actually manually queuing up these fights.
Yeah.
He has to sleep some of the time, which unfortunately is usually when Australians are awake.
Yeah. So, like, I get on and it's not happening. It's usually just not on when I'm on, which is kind of sad. But so I actually haven't seen a match outside of, like, just, like, random stuff I've happened upon in the fighting game community for a while now. But it's cool because there's, like, a community that's building itself around Salty Bet. And it's not, like, a terrible community. It's not...
Not yet, at least.
It's not yeah.
It's not good, decent, per se, but it's not... Like it's
chaotic neutral.
Yeah, like if you're looking at the Twitch chat, which is where most of the chat happens on that, you see a lot of dudes. It's pretty much just like dudes asking for the fights, and like is half of what's in there, and it's kind of funny the matchups people want, and that's half the humor there. There's just the stupid fighting itself. Then there's the betting and getting your way out of salt mines, and it's just I don't know. It's just stupid fun. And if you have, you just kind of want to watch AI fighting each other for whatever reason in the craziest way possible, it's gonna be pretty.
Because you're a freak.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay. So if you can't watch this because the shows aren't going on, what have you been up to? In the past.
Whoa, segue.
Jeez, should we do what we've been playing first or Guild Wars 2 stuff first?
Well, it's what have you been doing in the past hour, I'd say?
I've been playing some Guild Wars 2 with you, good sir.
What? Yeah, we checked out this latest patch, which we briefly talked about last episode. But what are your impressions on it? If you guys want to give me the rundown back and forth.
So what's it called? What's the thing called?
Queen's Jubilee. They were celebrating.
Do we know like which jubilee it is? Like a diamond jubilee or like a gold jubilee or a silver?
Jubilee? It is the 10-year jubilee of the queen.
There shouldn't be a fucking jubilee for 10 years.
I thought the 10-year jubilee was like a paper gift or something. I don't know.
Is it
a paper gift? What's that?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of like the 10-year wedding gift.
What's the 10-year wedding? What?
10 years.
I don't even know what's going on.
You're touching upon cultural touchstones
right now.
It's a tin/aluminum, according to Wikipedia. Which, to be honest, that's not very good.
Give him some aluminum foil.
Yeah, so 10. It's paper for 1 year, cotton, and then leather, linen, wood, iron, wool, bronze, copper, tin/aluminum, and then
that's the U.S. Apparently, for U.K., it differs slightly. So I guess in Tyria, it is 10-year. For a queen versus a queen with her city is make a arena inside the hole that you have in your city.
And the budget was apparently quite low.
It's weird that that's so specific.
Huge. The budget was huge for that hole.
Well, not the event itself.
Well, how
was it? She's just on a fucking in the middle of a circle in like a cage.
Well, yeah,
she's just standing there watching Logan Thackeray fight a robot.
Like, it was really weird going into like this majestic hole in the ground and then coming to the bottom, and there's just like three dudes standing in a circle.
Yeah,
and nothing else there. Well, actually, there was a couple NPCs around the outside, but it wasn't quite like because the event was called what, like the grand opening or something, and it was just. It was just those three people. Like I couldn't see. It was kind of anticlimactic when we looked, because the first thing we did was we got there and we looked around the hole and it was really impressive. And look at all the stuff that's happening in Divinity, all the changes they made to Divinity's Reach. And all of them are pretty cool. And then like, we were like, oh, and then all like the dressing they've done is quite pretty. And like it looks like a mask or like a helm if you look at it at the right angle. And it's very like, it's very human in the Guild Wars 2 terms. But then as soon as we go through the teleporter, and Durin finds a way to jump off the side and into the hole, essentially.
Yep.
But you know, once you get down, it's the ultimate anti-climax, because there's like this whole pan around the area and shows you all the cool shit, and then he goes down and just three dudes standing next to one another, and one of them is Logan, and we're like, why the fuck's Logan here?
It seems like they put her in like an elevated area because she's the queen, mm-hmm. but she's just standing amongst commoners because
I was expecting like a crowd or something, like just people.
No, it's three people.
There were a bunch of emissaries there that quickly ran away from something. Foreshadowing?
Dude, there was like the craziest plot twist. You think we could spoil it on this podcast?
I don't know if we can spoil this.
How long did it take us to call it?
I called it. I'm like,
two seconds?
Fuck. I was so angry.
Into the hole before we called it? Or did we...
No, we got into the hole because it was like... It's like when she unveiled it, it's like, oh, it's our new invention.
Oh, right.
I guess we'll probably provide the backstory for it before we start railing on it, I guess, maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, it's what backstory? It's they made an arena inside the giant hole, mm-hmm. to commemorate humans' tenacity against all the different, like the six different races that have caused them kerfuffle.
Yeah, but for some reason, like she wanted to develop like this sentry to help guard humanity, which was like this clockwork, this watch golem, I think, what do they call it?
Yeah, I think it was just like a practical application of, hey, look what we can make.
Yeah.
Asturians aren't the only tinkerous people.
And
we like to make stuff too.
And then, what a surprise. It fucks up. What a surprise.
We didn't see that happen before in this video game.
No, of course not. I thought, because I made fun of him, like, oh, imagine this happens. That'd be so original.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it would actually happen because it would be too cliche, but my expectations were unfortunately broken.
Man, we're starting with like the bummer part of this because...
Yeah, the rest of the thing was...
It's leading up to the cool stuff.
I mean, yeah, because we've been pretty critical of...
You
got
the bad news out first before you get in the good news.
I will say the format delivery I enjoyed of just... It, as painful as it might be to some people, it was as soon as you walk into the main area where all the action will be, the events, the 1v1 fighting and all that, mm-hmm. they just get the story beat out of the way, opposed to previously... There's like you have to talk to somebody who's off to the side to trigger it. Now it's just an automatic thing. Go into the zone, boom, have it.
I think that the triggering would have been cooler because in the execution in this part, because it was so anticlimactic with only like if you went in and all the stuff was popping off, then you triggered the stuff. You at least had like an idea of how things are gonna be before you get there. But if it had if we'd gone there. And the only thing we'd done was see the story beat, I would have been like, yeah, okay, whatever, and close the game. Like that would have been the extent.
I guess a good question is, if it weren't for me there to say, no, guys, you should check out this other stuff as well,
mm-hmm.
after having the story beat, would you have just left?
Probably.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
I would have actually just logged out of the game.
Yeah.
Or me and Cynic would be laughing at it.
Yeah, we'd be laughing at it. And then
we go to PvP and then laugh some more and then quit.
Yeah, like we because, what's his face? We generally don't want to go around and fight stuff. And it turned out that the fighting stuff was the fun part of this DLC.
Pleasant surprise of myself.
See, you want to give just like shock if you want to say, because I was shocked. That I was like, oh my god, this is actually
describe
fun.
To the listeners what the fighting was.
All right, so we saw that stupid, really terrible intro thing, and I have no idea.
Our favorite character, Logan Thackeray.
Let's just. And you know the core conflict of the game, him versus Ritlock. Yeah. That was the dumbest.
I don't find it funny at all.
Voice acting, as I said at the time.
It's that Troy Baker has work, though.
Wait, is Logan Troy Baker? I thought
that was Nolan North.
No. Oh shit, he might be Troy Baker. You might be right. I recognize the name.
Nolan North, I think, is the
Human Warrior
voice.
Yeah. So yeah,
your character, Cynic, Human Warrior.
Yeah, it goes bad the most obvious way possible, and then I wasn't even paying attention to how the plot progresses. It was just like this evil chick showed up, and then we ran around for a bit, and then this big like airship. Actually, pretty cool animation. This airship goes to this portal.
No, but you have to remember during that running around. Describe what we did during that running around.
Wait,
I'm talking post story beat.
No, we're still on the story beat because I want to drive home how terrible it was. In the most Noob, what do you remember of the ending of the story beat? Because I don't remember anything.
Generally, you know, it surprised me yet again with its excitement and its adrenaline-filled action.
Yeah.
Where there's, like, this char dude and then, like, a blue circle around him.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to go around him and then move through, like, five different points in a circle,
mm-hmm.
where we did nothing and we simply watched him talk to a person.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I don't remember doing anything.
No, because we just saw, they threw something at each other once.
Uh-huh.
And then I think that was the peak.
I think the idea was like he or she was a good shot and he had a bow and he was firing at her or something.
I thought the idea was... Actually, I don't know what I thought the idea was.
All I remember was that the airship thing was cool. Everything else was pretty dumb. It was really, really, really... I don't know how this is going to progress. Like, for a second there, we actually had high hopes because we thought, like, because the evil person is Silvari, and we thought that it was going to be the chick from Twilight Arbor, like the Kaith's girlfriend.
The lover of Kaith, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that would be really cool because the Nightmare Corps is probably the coolest antagonist in Guild Wars 2, in my opinion.
I joined Nightmare Court. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I think they're really awesome. And I was like, okay, cool. The next huge story beat is going to be about the Nightmare Court. That's going to be awesome. And no, it just turns out to be some random Silvari with a purple face.
This is your fault for setting up your expectations unrealistically. But to be fair, I think that after this, it shattered my extremely low expectations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it was actually enjoyable, which you can talk about.
So that's the thing, right? Because me and Noob, when we go into like these things and generally have a romp through the new content of games, of Guild Wars 2 specifically, we tend to like do like the story and non-combat stuff because that's like, kind of what we want to see. So if it wasn't for Thurbleton and actually going around and going, okay, no, we need to do this. This thing's actually pretty cool. We would have seen none of the cool stuff in this like DLC.
We would just be pissed like we always are at the game.
It's, and it's,
but instead we're happy.
I thought it was really legitimately cool. So, Thurbleton, what did you show us? I don't know like what any of it was called, so it's all you.
Well, I mean, like the long and the short of it was the main thing I knew you wanted to see was how we always talk about the large-scale boss fights being non-existent since the beta, namely the char fight in the char starting zone.
Mm.
Which very simple mechanic of every now and then, if you attack me, I'm going to kill everyone.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I don't know.
Yeah. They've since expanded on that and just thrown around like a dozen or so ideas in the form of these six zones, like the Centaur were once a threat, Bandits, Flame Legion,
mm-hmm.
and three others, which I can't think of.
Yeah. It was the
RPGs, I guess.
What's his face? The Destroyers. One of them.
Destroyers are a threat too. Yeah,
that was actually probably the lamest of the ones we did. I don't know.
Anyway, though, they've come up with some ideas for large scale fights. Now that they know, like, basically, we know a lot of people are going to be doing these story missions. We're going to have large scale fights, and we'll show off the ideas we have for the scale up system in that we'll be seeing throughout the game, but specifically we'll be seeing added champions in. Salsun and Orr,
right?
Which I think is coming out either this that has been out released or is coming out in the next one.
Mm.
Anyway, without rambling too much, it's cool stuff.
It is cool stuff.
I think it was hit and miss. When it was amazing. When it missed, it was terrible.
I don't think it was terrible. It was just more of the same. I think that was the problem.
It was just confusing. Chaos when it was
more of the same.
Here's the thing though, Cynic, is I was actually reading something about this not too long ago. That chaos that you're talking about, that's just kind of, unfortunately, that is Guild Wars 2 combat.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, like, it's that maybe. Is talked about.
That is lack of Trinity combat.
Mm-hmm. No. Because the other boss fight was awesome. But the first one we did was just chaos. It was just the worst.
But the other boss fight was just chaos also.
Oh, it was managed chaos. Like, everyone was actually doing things in, like, a coherent whole. What? Okay, no. A bunch of people were just running at him and dying.
Okay, let's rewind a bit.
Okay.
Describe the destroyer fight.
Right. So,
or just the destroyer Zerg.
Well, okay. I'm going to give my perspective on the destroyer fight. I ran into a cloud of flying things, and things were exploding, and there was just so much shit on my screen. I had no idea what was happening. I had no idea where anyone was. So I ran away, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to change my elite skill because I think I'll need to revive people because there seemed to be a bunch of dead people on the ground. I don't know how they died because everything was just popping off, but I'm going to change my elite skill. And then I wanted to run away from the combat and get out of combat. So my elite skill was Signet of Rage at the time, and I wanted to change it to like the actual elite for warriors, which is the banner thing. So I ended up using the Signet of Rage.
Okay. I just think a ton of people who play warriors are just raged at you for saying that's the actual elite.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, so I used the Signet of Rage to get away from combat faster, then realized that, wait, no, I wanted to change it out for banner, which is the proper elite that warriors should be using. So I had to stand there and wait. So I guess the boss fight was happening while I was gone. So I went back towards it when I finally changed back to banner. And I saw there was like this path to the right to this outcropping over the boss fight. And so it was just me and a ranger standing there with me with a rifle, him with whatever the fuck he was using. And I just ended up pelting the boss fight from above, conveniently avoiding all the chaos from below, which admittedly had seemed to clear up by the time. And then we just DPS'd him out. That's what I saw of the boss fight. Did anyone actually stay in the chaos?
I was a melee
character. Durin, do you guys want to give your opinion?
Well, I mean, to the boss, walked circles around them, and hit my one button a lot.
Oh, really? Man.
You actually walked circles? I did 1, 2, 3, 4,
well, I walked like half circles.
And then sometimes 6, and I forgot that I had 7 and 8 skills.
Okay, so for the record, the destroyer's basically two abilities are AoEs of just like... Mm-hmm. fire damage, I guess, which is pretty negligible. Mm-hmm. And then the main thing is he will spawn like erupt volcanoes that are the main thing.
Yeah.
Because they do like basically you're standing in lava debuff of you take a crap ton of damage.
Right.
But since you have the boss pinned in a corner and everyone's stacking in that corner, unless the lava plume is right there, it's going to affect like 5% of the fight.
Right.
So I can understand why people don't enjoy that. However, what about the next fight you guys
did? Well, before we get there, though, like it did the thing where, like, what was happening was when we got there was just a bunch of people there because obviously it's a new area and everyone's checking it out. So it spawned a shitload of those flying and just general destroyer champions. And that's what, like, the chaos
it's veterans this time.
Yeah, veterans. So it was,
I didn't see any other champions.
So that's why I thought it was absolute chaos, because we got there and it was just like a sea of enemies. And there's this one boss dude in the middle and just like a shitload of people there. And it was just craziness. I don't know if that was an enjoyable level of craziness, because we've talked about this before. And the idea of spawning hard enemies to support the boss was an interesting one. I actually thought it was going to be a good one. But the way they did this, and the way that like the enemies clip into each other in specific ways, and there's just like the area was like hilly, or it kind of had like ledges and stuff, or ridges, so it was like kind of like a funnel kind of shape. So everyone was kind of boxed in. There's a lot of enemies in a small amount of area, a lot of people in a small amount of area, and then you had these other like boss things happening at the same time. I don't think it was conducive to fun. I thought it just ended up being confusing. And even though I thought originally that the spawning idea was a good thing, I'm not as confident in it now that I've actually seen it. But thankfully, they're obviously going to be trying out different permutations of it. I think in that one specifically, they just spawned too many like adds in a too small a space. And that's why it kind of fucked everything up for me. That's kind of when I ran away, because I was like, no, I don't want to go anywhere near that. I'm just going to go over here, change my skills, and come back. So, I
guess the nice thing is there's not there shouldn't be too many times in which you're fighting, like a fight will evolve into that level of chaos in that short, like small area.
Yeah.
Most of the fights in Guild Wars tend to be out in the open.
And I think if it was out in the open, it would have been far more manageable and therefore like far cooler. Because it was like in a space similar to, because this isn't the first boss that spawned ads. Like if you consider the dragon, the one in the waterfront. Shatter. No, the one in the waterfront and that poisons
Tquaddle?
You. Tquaddle, yeah. He spawns like shit. He's like one of the cooler boss fights in the game. He spawns stuff. And that could be cool if this was like supplanted to an area the size of that. Aside from that, it was, I can't really speak to the boss itself in this case because I was standing on a ledge, but it didn't seem like the boss itself did anything interesting. And Durin, I think you'd agree that you were just able to circle strafe and hit one, right?
Yeah, when I wasn't dying, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So that one was, I think that one was a failed experiment in that case. But the other one was really cool. I actually really, really liked it. Should I just describe it?
yeah. Well, Durin, you want to like give your interpretation of the centaur fight?
Yeah, so what do you see?
The centaur fight, that was the guy that shot the bow and arrow, right?
Yeah, the second one.
I saw a lot of dirt.
I saw a lot of red circles.
And a lot of running back.
You right. need to stop playing Devil Dagger Ellie.
No. No. Never. I will stop playing this game before I stop playing Devil Dagger
Ellie. Okay, you need to make a tanky setup with your gear then.
Man. Yeah,
I mean, I'm more survivable than I used to be. I'm not.
I didn't die at all in that fight, and I was constantly next to him.
You had a shield.
Well, we were and the Thurbleton were warriors. So we had to have that advantage. Yeah.
And the health pool to help with that.
Yeah, like he never got me below half, which is which is your amount of health. Like I have 26,000 of health, so he would have killed you. Yeah.
I will do some of those events again on my Ellie, which is now 80. Mm. And if I just get slammed 24/7 while right next to him, I will give you an apology later.
I know. I think you're supposed to.
I will say some of that was not necessarily like my build so much as me half-ass playing.
Yeah, because we haven't played in a while.
Yeah, because if you want to explain some of these ways you died, I guess.
Well, one of the times I turned back, I was coming down the ramp and a circle showed up directly under me and immediately killed me. So that was fun.
Yay.
I was standing in a volley of arrows, so I totally deserved it.
Nice. Yes.
His two attacks were a large grouping of volley of arrows that had a high amount of damage, and then just basically an auto attack that was a cone of arrows.
I deserved it in that I was standing in a volley of arrows. However, the arrows are incredibly hard to see, and there is no indicator that they are happening. And when there are like 50 people all like crowded around this guy fighting him, it can be kind of hard to see the arrows through all the spell effects.
I don't know. I had an entirely different, because at this point I was like, you know what? I like the rifle on my warrior, and I think that boss fights are a bad idea to get up close and personal because of exactly those reasons. In my time with Guild Wars 2, any time where there's a small high health pool boss, standing next to him is just makes everything invisible, which is how much spell effects and shit is going on.
The problem is that like somebody has to.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Not necessarily in this fight. I don't think people, because when he was kiting around, it was easy to kill.
Sir.
Yeah,
yeah.
But like the cool thing was at this point I had Banner, so that was working as intended. And it was me and like a group of like, it wasn't you guys, but it was like a group of like six or eight like rangers or like other like caster or like range dudes were roaming around like the outside circle of the battlefield, taking positions. And then as soon as he'd arrow storm in our area, we'd just scatter and reform somewhere else. So it was like this mobile band just harrying him as they in like a circle around him, moving around. And what we'd also do is like, half of us would be like a small group of people, including myself sometimes, would be attached to us and just res everyone as we go past them. So we ended up like going in semicircles to three-quarter circles around the boss, resing people as we went through. And then at that point I had Banner, so as soon as he spiked an area, I'd drop Banner on that area, and then suddenly people would get up and the fight will continue. So it was like this pretty cool experience of us it was kind of brought me back to the original, like the early stuff, because it was a literal, there were points in that fight where it was a literal sea of corpses again. And I'm so happy to use that term again, because there's just so many people dead on the ground, but for like good reasons. Like it was
it reminded me of the Karka events in that you could tell there were people who knew, like, oh, this is an AoE, I need to dodge or I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And then a large group of people who just died.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
because they just, like, weren't given the full attention, just, like, and they didn't care about it, or they just, like, didn't react in time. And it's just like, okay.
It was like those action movies where it's like a group of people and something like is slowly falling towards them and only the hero knows to dodge out of the way just in time. It was kind of like that. But seeing Thurbleth in a group of like noobs, because it was like a group of dudes that directly like in spitting distance of the boss, and then a big circle would appear around them and you'd see one mesmer or warrior at the time like dodging out and everyone else just go blue. Just a bunch of blue, like, res signals coming up at the same time. It was cool. And I thought that his cone attack was a bit meh, but I really liked his circles. Like, again, one of my other favorite fights was...
It's the idea of the cone attack of not being just him auto-attacking one person.
Right. Which is good.
They're thinking of, okay, how can we fight with large groups of people?
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll come up with interesting ideas.
Yeah.
This just seems like a lazy approach to it, but more effective than what they've had prior.
Definitely better than him. Like I was going to say, like, one of my favorite fights is this near the Norn starter area, I've forgotten, Frozenfell, like something. Like, it's just like this big frozen lake, and there's like a shaman there, and he goes crazy, and he has multiple forms, and he brings down storms. Does anyone remember that?
Oh, wait, from the fractals?
No. It's in the Norn start area. Whatever. Like, there's fights which have been ruined by, like, there's the boss, and he has awesome area effect stuff that spans huge amounts of distance, which I think is fun. But he also, like, aggroes in a single target and just melees them or something. And how they've usually done that is that he just does a shitload of damage in melee, so he kills that guy instantly and then moves on to the next guy. But it's really boring because there's no like threat of him as a person, just the stuff he's been laying down. But for this boss, it's kind of cool because he'd be facing the direction that he'd laid down the AoEs in. So if someone aggroed him in a specific direction and you actually tactically moved behind him, you'd know that you're relatively safe while you're there. And it was like just elements of that, of his directional facing was important. He was doing AoE instead of single target, so it was important in that way as well. And the area effects he dropped down were actually damaging. Like, they do like 13,000 damage in like a couple seconds. So they were pretty cool. So I thought this boss fight was a good example of how to scale a boss for a lot of people, as opposed to others. And I was actually really excited. It was one of the more fun fights I've had in a long time, I think it was too. And Noob actually said, Noob, what did you do? Because you actually seemed to agree that these fights were fun, but I didn't see what you did.
Well, I got hit by a bunch of red circles, and I saw a bunch of red circles, and I was running around in circles.
Yeah, I did.
Circle.
I think one thing that we can all hope Arena takes a good hard look at is the priority of animations, and maybe finding a way to make some of the more like commonly seen like not essential animations, like I don't like the mesmer, the AoE, or just like general AoEs that are like offensive and don't like, find some way to scale those down in animation priority and have more important ones take like a higher approach, so it's cleaned up a little bit.
Yeah. It's just really hard, also, especially when you have a small enemy.
A long running wish is if they had an option to make it so that you could make the AoE ring just like bolder, like in terms of like thickness, because I know friends who are colorblind, and if you see they cannot see a red AoE on a brown, like a dirt surface.
Man.
Because it's brown on brown.
Well, not even just colorblind. Like, if there are just a lot of effects on the ground at the time, it can be really hard to make out the that thin red circle. I mean,
Would you guys be okay with if they had like a tier of like five options or something like they have with calling in World versus World, and you could choose what level of graphic intensity to go with?
Well, that, or is there an option to just turn off all other spell effects but your own?
That's kind of what I want.
Well, I mean, like, That is what people
you turn
want.
Off the spell effects, and you can see that circle a lot better. And then they need that colorblind mode.
You won't see combo fields then, and that's one of the big things of like, oh, you're working with other people with the combo fields.
That could be the
spider. But who actually like really? How feasible is it to really plan around combo fields
in PvE?
It just kind of happen.
I think in a 5-man dungeon, it's definitely useful. But in a 40-man zerg, I agree.
Yeah, I can definitely see like a case
in a 5-man dungeon like that. You're not gonna have that problem really. Like I'm talking like with the big fights is where you really have the problem with AoEs.
Yeah.
So again, if they have like just a priority coding of like cap it at like 10 animations of friendlies.
I'd like to see like just a straight up slider, like just straight up see nothing but your own. One step above that is see only your own and combo fields that affect you, and then like just keep stepping up from there.
Or even simple, like instead of doing combo, because again, you're only really going to be using this mostly in these large scale fights like this. Mm. To have like only see your own, only see yours and party, and see all.
Yeah, even if it's just that, it would be better than what it is now. Like, but it's one of those cases where a melee guy has just so much harder time. Because I was playing range, I could see the entire battlefield for the whole fight. I had plenty of fun moving around, moving tactically, rezzing, so on and so forth, because I was able to keep track of everything. But if I was up close and personal with him playing melee for that fight, it would have been... I probably would have had an experience close to the Durin's. I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it as much.
Well, that's not to say that it wasn't fun. I just... Yeah. I wasn't playing the way I should have been. It's been a long time since I've actually done a fight in this game. I generally log in, mess around for a little while, and leave or whatever.
Right.
So I was incredibly rusty. I wasn't dodging like I was supposed to be. I wasn't using my utilities like I should have been. Like it was a lot of it was definitely on me. However, it did definitely bring up the issue with
animations
with seeing circles in a big fight.
Yeah, yeah. But it was cool. Like these are definitely. Though even the destroyer fight was more fun than the stuff me and Noob did in story missions like a couple months ago.
Oh yeah,
like Jesus Christ! Like these are definite steps forward, and I'm really happy to say that. So, but yeah, that wasn't it though. That wasn't it for the Queen's Jubilee. Like, how'd you guys like the visual design? Because I think this is one of the prettiest DLCs in quite a while.
I mean, it helped that like in this small, relatively small area, they had a nice variety of environments.
Yeah.
And they were able to do that, and that was cool.
That was really cool. I liked the how it was split up into six areas. I don't think they could do that again, but for the fact that they did this once was really kind of fun.
Now, like I mentioned this while we were doing it. I don't know if it affected anybody else, but like frame rate took a huge dive in that area.
I didn't have a problem with it. I don't know.
From 40 frames down to like 18.
Jeez.
I don't usually track that stuff, and I'm usually comfortable with like 20 frames.
When
it gets down to like 10, that's an issue. But other than that,
Sobelton's like me. He's a horrible person like me that doesn't really.
I'm an old man who's had to. I have had to sacrifice graphic cards quality for just being able to play the game.
Yeah,
me too.
So I'm
playing at the lowest settings, so I don't even care about frames per second anymore.
But for me, I just didn't have a dip. I didn't see a dip, but I don't know. It could have been. I don't know what
it could be. Like again, going back to Guild Wars 2's engine, even after optimization, it's still very CPU intensive, and I do have a very old CPU at this point. I mean, we're on to the fourth gen of my CPU. So I can't really bitch too much.
Man.
And I have a friend to run it also at like the prettiest settings. So
yeah
totally on that part.
The other nice thing about it was about the Queen's Jubilee was the 1v1 fighting, which
I told you
guys about. I did some of it, but you guys didn't try any of it, did you?
No.
I'm too rusty in combat right now.
Okay, before I explain what it was.
We watched it and it was super
What was
cool.
your take on it? Yeah. How was my performance, as it were?
It was cool because, I mean, like I said at the time, it's basically dungeon training, which this game's players need desperately. Because it seems like each fight, based on what you were describing when you went in, like each fight seems to have a kind of a theme, like this guy does this or that guy does that, and you need to learn how to deal with that in order to get through the fight. And then I'm kind of explaining it as I go, but like the timer thing as well is nice, because again it forces you to get in there and fight and not just kite them around forever.
Yeah Not just dwindle down their health and be bored.
Yeah,
you have to deal with the mechanics.
It's sort of as weird as it sounds. It reminded me of the Clash in the Clouds DLC that we had that BioShock Infinite had a while ago of just like, hey, we're going to throw this fight at you. And like the blue ribbon is similar to the Gambit system, but it's more or less just like, hey, here's this weird fight. Try and survive it. With a bit more MMO theme, but
I still think that name is too cool to have been wasted on this, but sure. That's because I'm a Final Fantasy XII freak, so Gambit Systems has always been.
What is a gambit?
It's what they call
it's a wager or bet, usually.
I know, but like in Final Fantasy.
I think that was the name for what they call like the program your AI system in in Final Fantasy XII. That is off topic. The point is, I thought it was really cool from a standpoint of what could follow on from this and the visual design. Like I love the whole like domes in the sky and the floor dropping out if you take too long, and that kind of that stuff was all beautiful, like walking up the ramps to the big circle.
I guess before we go too far into this, what we're talking about is anyone listening, you should check out the Queen's Jubilee if you haven't already, because all this stuff that we're talking about is temporary. It will be gone in a week or 3 weeks at best.
Of course, the one fucking awesome thing we find has to be temporary.
Yeah, I really hope they'll go back and leave this as just a permanent thing. But you go to the Queen's, like the big hole in the ground, and you can just queue up for a series of various fights, which we'll talk about the different kinds. But it's just straight up 1v1, like as Durin said, dungeon training, or basically learning to actually fight someone rather than just DPS them down. Evading, avoiding attacks, kiting, knowing when to attack, when not to attack.
Right.
Sorry to cut you off, Cindy, but like that's more or less what like you got from it, right?
Yeah, I think that's
You only saw like two variations, but I think it goes to a pretty high tier of craziness.
I just kind of want to see like this. I saw that and envisioned an event where you had like three people go in. They fight like the three, like each individually fight. I said this idea, okay? Just listen, bear with me and tell me if it's cool or not, right? It's the same idea, but with three hanging domes, right? And three people go in, they each fight their own monster. The person who beats their monster first gets a certain amount of points, and it swaps between the three. So you have the three people, they beat their monsters, and then they teleport to the next dude's monster. That goes around for three rounds. So whoever gets the most points from each gets the highest point score. And that person then goes into the center, which is a bigger dome. And you have a monster that combines all three effects from the people they fought. They have to 1v1 that. And if they beat that, they get a huge reward. That's an arena idea.
As weird as this sounds, you are sort of reminding me of the disc battle scene in Tron Legacy.
Yeah, kind of like that. But I just...
This might be the second town/PvP activity I would be really interested in doing.
Yeah.
The first one being Keg Brawl. If they made that into an event, that would be awesome.
And so that, like, this kind of gave me like shivers as to what it could develop into. And I like the idea. It's really sad that this is confirmed to be going away, right? Like this specific thing.
I am 90% sure that this is a temporary thing.
Yeah.
I only because like the whole idea of the hole in the ground is open for interpretation of whatever they want. Like if there's another event in Divinity's Reach, they'll use that for it. And so what we see now of like a split into a six wheel spoke and like centaur dredge and all that will go away most likely, meaning this fighting arena will go away. And I really wish it wouldn't, because it seems like an awesome idea.
It's a cool idea, but it already got to the point where very few people were doing it. Like I can see how it's only something you do like a couple of times. It's only when or if they develop it into like an interesting competitive idea that I see more people doing it.
If they put it in the PvP training area, I think, if there was a PvE training area, that would be cool.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Kind of cool. Is that it for this DLC? Like
is a dungeon else? In the mists. Other than that, I mean, there was the light the torches thing, which I thought was neat. Do we want to talk about the exclusive rich area that New really wanted to go to?
The commander's only area?
Yeah.
That was dumb. I don't see the point of it being... Is that permanent? It sounded like it was
for the rich and famous.
That is permanent. That is permanent, I believe.
Yeah, because it's like this 500 gem entry fee, 2 weeks standing. You have to repay in 2 weeks. And It's just a real convenient little area which has all the stuff you want in one spot, which is kind of like Lion's Arch to me. So I don't really see the point, but
Lion's Arch you have to run a little bit, but not really that bad.
Yeah. Anyway, it's cute. I'll give it that.
I guess is there anything else you've been up to this week? More or less includes the Guild Wars stuff. They've yet to throw out.
Thought we were doing a Guild Wars discussion. Was that for later?
Oh, yeah. Look, before we get there, though, like the PvP changes, I think it's actually probably a good thing, is my final stance on it, but it's kind of mixed for me. So what they changed specifically was they split up tournaments into one person queuing and multi-person queuing, and the pools of actual fights are split as well. So one person queuing fights will be entirely segregated from team fights, which is, I think, a good thing. Durin, I'm kind of mixed on this. I don't know, man. I don't know. In some ways, I think that the one person queuing will be complete trash.
I mean, the one person queuing will basically be like the hot queuing was before, except now you get tournament rewards for it.
Yeah.
But also, by that same token, the people who are trying to do 2-3 person queues or even 5 person queues won't have to worry about a trash round. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really great for them. It's just that the sad thing was.
Now, do 5 person queues only queue with 5 person queues?
I don't think so, because that would be impossible. Like, you'd never have to fight.
I don't think so, but yeah, I'd like to think that they have some algorithm for.
Some kind of priority thing.
Mm. Well, like, if you're queuing a 5 person thing, that you have a higher rank because of that than if you were the exact same skill level of people in a 3 person rank. So, meaning you are either going to face off an equal skilled 5 person team or a 2 person team and a 3 person team that is higher skilled than you to balance out the coordination.
Wait, is that actually in there or is that something you think they're doing?
That is how other games have done it, like League of Legends and whatnot. Because, right. I would be in a 5-man of, twinks, I think is the term. But just, we are all very skilled at the game, but we've all made new accounts. So we're all level 2.
Mm.
And we'll go up against, level 28 or something. So people are about to hit top level.
Right. I think that could work out fine. It's just that some of my favorite memories from PvP in general was jumping in by myself and being matched up with three people who knew each other and one other random, and us doing incredibly well for the tournament because 3 people knew what they're doing. I kind of know what I'm doing. Back then, I definitely knew what I was doing. And it was just a case of you can kind of band together and have a pug experience that's actually good because you're in a situation where being competitive is important. And that was really fun. But in the matches where I was just thrown in with 4 random dudes, 9 times out of 10, one time out of 10, it was really awesome. But 9 times out of 10, it was just a boring, shitty match. You just come up against 4 thieves and a guardian and just get rickrolled. And it was kind of dumb. And I'm worried for the people who are just so solo queuing. But at the same time, I know that's, you kind of know what you're getting into it. Because if you really don't want to fight other solo queuers, you can just have a look around your general area and see if someone else there wants to group up. And that could be better for everyone involved. So, hey, there's ways around it. I think it's definitely better, as you guys said, for the people who want to fight groups only, because you do get a different level, a different type of combat when you are fighting a coordinated team. So, yeah, it's cool. That's essentially it. That's all I have to say about Guild Wars 2 this week. Is there anything else?
That's more or less I got. I'm pensively curious, I guess, for the upcoming story beats, but that's really just hoping that the mysterious figure we saw in the story mission with Logan Thackeray is Fallon from the Twilight Arbor.
She didn't look like her, man. She was
I doubt it.
She looked too gaunt. Her face was messed up.
The one thing was it was a similar skin-colored Silvari who was playfully jokey.
Typical.
But racist. Other than that, it didn't sound the same. It just.
Yeah, I don't think it's her.
How am I racist against
Silvari? No, you're just being all Silvaris look the same. All Silvaris are
like half of my.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can make fun of Silvaris because you're not an actual Silvari. You're not an actual Silvari. You don't understand their pain.
Neither is that person. They're not real.
No, but that person's an actual Silvari.
Cynic, anything else you've been up to?
As just in general?
Yeah, I mean, how's your week been?
Okay, right. We are going to watch Pain and Gain tomorrow, and I cannot fucking wait for that.
Oh, no!
I cannot wait.
I'm sure you can wait, though.
It's getting weightlifting.
I don't know. I've become a huge fan of Dwayne Johnson, Dwayne The Rock Johnson over the last
couple
years.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
And I can't, like, Alex Navarro.
Okay, so wait, I must be out of the loop here. What is this?
Have you seen the trailer for that movie with Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Marky Mark Wahlberg?
No, but now I need to.
Yeah.
It's an awesome movie where these dudes are like weightlifting dudes, but then they're like, let's go torture people, and then it's like a good jolly bag of fun.
I don't know. You're missing one key point here. Not to mention the third person is I think his name is Anthony Mackie, who's like an actual like serious actor. I'm not saying that the other two aren't serious actors, but
you there.
Yeah, like he's the guy from The Hurt Locker and like the Adjustment Bureau, and he's been like a ton of like really well
serious
films.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, serious movies. And he's in here as well. And it's directed by Michael Bay.
What? Okay, now I have to watch this. I see now why Cynic is excited.
So here's the thing, right?
Carry on.
It's based on it's loosely based on a true story where these dudes were like, hey, these assholes have all the money. Let's just take all the money from them. So they get together and they're like, rob these really rich people, and they just live off that, right? And then someone catches up.
No, because the problem with that film is it's not like, oh, this is like Robin Hood, and we're just
no, they just keep it for themselves.
No, right, and the fact that they're all ex-cons, like I think Mark Wahlberg's character is like in jail for fraud, and then of course it's not stealing. He tortures the fuck out of the guy before he takes the money.
Yeah, but the cool thing is it's incredibly tongue-in-cheek. It's really dumb. It's got, again, Mark Wahlberg and The Rock in the same movie with Michael Bay directing. And most importantly to me, it is Alex Navarro's current movie of the year. And I was like, okay, I need to see it.
Wow.
And I need to see it. It's supposedly really funny and really good, so I'm going to check it out. Not my friends...
Bad.
Well, you didn't like Wolverine, so you're wrong about everything.
I didn't... I'll talk about that.
No, this is coming from a person who didn't like Pacific Rim, so I'm probably the wrong person, but I don't know. I really liked Wolverine, and you're bad. But no, so I'm looking forward to that. That's that I'm watching tomorrow, and that's why we couldn't record tomorrow. The other thing I did this week was play more Might and Magic Clash of Heroes, which... So... That game is really cool, but it has the problem of it has a multi like chapter story, but it resets you between each chapter. So like you are like this awesome level 10 dude with this huge army of really cool dudes, and you've gotten like this pattern of like just freaking rolling your enemies, and then the next chapter starts and you're a new character and you have nothing again, which kind of sucks. I don't know. It's really boring in some ways.
But you're talking about how great it is.
It's the core gameplay loop is really fun. I just suspect that game is not for people who just like me sat down and played it for like 8 hours at a stretch. So like, I think if you do play in small chunks, you'd be less affected by getting into the groove of things and then being reset. But the actual game is still really fun. I'm going to go back to it. But the reason I stopped playing it wasn't because I got bored of it. It was because a game I've been looking forward to forever finally came out this week, which was Tales of Xillia. Yeah, JRPGs are back, baby. No one cares, do they? I hate you all.
You are the only person excited.
No, actually, I'm really interested in playing it. I just didn't... I don't have the funds for it right now because Saints Row.
I think you are Saints making Row. The right choice. Yeah, I think you're making the right choice in picking Saints Row over Tales of Xillia, to be honest.
Really?
Is it not a good game? Good?
Hmm? To our podcast resident Australian, mm-hmm. I want to apologize to you for not being able to experience the majesty of Saints Row 4 in its full and intended glory.
We can talk about that, but before we get there, I'm just going to say Tales of Xillia is not as good so far as Tales of Vesperia by a long, long stretch, but it's still pretty good. Like, I'd give it like a 7.5 or 8 out of 10. It's pretty engrossing. Like, I played 18 hours since Tuesday, so it's got me, and I really like Tales games, apparently, so it's got me that way. But if you had to pick a Tales game to play, you can pick up Tales of Vesperia for like $2. It's for Xbox 360, and I think that's like the game to play if you.
Is that for $2? Where are you buying this for $2?
I need to get it. It's like 10 years old. I'm assuming it's for $2. It's like, I think it's like 4 years old, something like that. Tales of Vesperia. It is really.
I don't understand where you find 10-year-old games for $2. That's ridiculous.
It'd be around there. I'm guessing
the original Call of Duty on Steam is like $20,
and it's $25.
Jesus, not even a bargain bin. In a bargain bin, you can't get for cheaper.
Well, that's new.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Just pick it up used. Like, it doesn't really matter. It's just a really good game that's really worth playing. Like, that is probably my JRPG of the generation. Even I liked it way more than Final Fantasy 13, and I like it more than Final Fantasy 13 too. And this. So if you want to play a JRPG that came out this gen, play Tales of Vesperia. It was fucking amazing. Tales of Zillie is not as good. It's more streamlined, but it's got two protagonists, and you can choose which one you play, but neither of them are likable. And that's really sucks. It's also got like Troy Baker giving the most like bored. It felt to me like Troy Baker was doing like 3 days a week on The Last of Us and like 2 days a week on this. So the fact that he loved his role as Joel so much made him give the most boring performance he's ever given in this game. Because it was just like, he's just talking into the microphone for this, and it's really sad. So I've just stopped using his character because he's just not giving a good performance in this game, which is kind of sad. And it's got like eight out of the people we've met in terms of just like enemy characters have just been like dudes from anime that I recognize, like voices from English dubbed anime. It's just really distracting. So the voice acting isn't that great. The main two characters are just really shit, and in my opinion, just like hard to relate to, not very like complex. They're just boring. The side characters are pretty good so far. Like three of the side characters I've met have been really fun, and the gameplay is pretty top notch. It plays probably the best playing Tales game for quite a while, unless you like, you have people out there who like Tales of Graces. But whatever, that's actually all I have to say about that game. If you really want a Tales game and you've already finished Vesperia, play it. But otherwise, just play Vesperia. So you guys want to talk about Saints Row? Do you?
Yeah. I mean, like, I've seen bits and pieces of Saints Row. I've seen playthroughs of it. I've started actually playing Saints Row the Third in anticipation, loosely, for the Fourth, with a friend, and I am just super excited for Saints Row the Fourth.
I don't know anyone here who would really want that game who's gonna like accept the shitty censored version from here.
Here being Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like, if you're Australian... Well,
I mean, you're already a nation of criminals, so I wouldn't put it past you guys to pirate the game.
Well, don't pirate it, but if you get it off Green Man or an equivalent online service, you can probably just get a US Steam code, and that's probably the best way of doing it, because not only is it cheaper, because so it's US work prices, but...
How does it work if you have a US friend gift you a copy of it?
That works
you,
fine.
Will you receive... Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure fine. If you would then receive the US version, or if you would then receive... The Australian version.
Well, my friend did that for Skyrim because he'd just get it cheaper that way, and he got the US price for it, and I think he got a US copy of the game. I can't be like, I'm not going to sit here and say it's going to work the same for every publisher. So it might be a publisher by publisher basis, but
to any Australian listeners, if we have them,
import the game, dude. Just don't.
Well, no, it's yeah. Worst case scenario. Just have them gifted to you with a new account that is like 123 Fake Street USA.
Yeah. And 90210. Just use that for the.
Orange County represent, yo.
Has it been too long since that TV show for people to get why that's the first US zip code that comes to mind? Like, is that show too old?
No. Isn't that still going as a rerun?
Yeah, I think they remade it.
They remade it from 2008 to last year or this year.
I just remember, like, as a kid, just getting into girls, really being excited by that show. But I don't know if I ever watched an episode.
We live in the past where, like, there are current episodes of 90210 and New Kids on the Block are live in concert.
Man, TV. There's a reason we don't watch it, folks. There's a reason we
do
not watch
it. It's a reimagining, though.
So, jumping back to Saints Row the Fourth.
I'm not that exciting.
I have played around with the inauguration state, the demo that's effectively a character creator. And just loving that Nolan North is the fourth option, that it's just like male 1, 2, and 3, female 1, 2, and 3, seventh option, Nolan North.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you – but you can do a female with Nolan North's voice. Like that's a thing, right? Yeah.
What?
Hmm? You can do a male with a female voice.
Yeah.
You can do a female with Nolan North's voice.
Could you do that in 3?
Yeah. You could do a female with Nolan North's voice in 3.
Okay. Speaking of Saints Row, Shinboy can't be here right now, but he and I finished Saints Row the Third last week. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got Shinboy's opinion on it, but you want to drop your any memorable events from that game? Like, why is that game a thing and not just another open world game?
Well, I mean, obviously the Deckers Die thing has been talked to death. Like, it is pretty much the best mission in that game. But I think it's just how ludicrous that game gets and how I think part of the reason why the game is actually so funny and works as well as it does is because they managed to like ride the line of not trying too hard for the comedy and yet embracing just complete ridiculous dumbness. Like, I don't know, it's really hard to describe that game because, like, you try to describe it and the game just sounds like the worst fucking thing in the world. Like, it's an open world game where half the game is spent doing essentially tutorial missions, and it has a dildo bat, and you can pay money for DLC for a gun that pulls sharks out of the ground and kills people that way. And there's a wrestling mission, except you're not wrestling for half of it. And then the ending is basically rushed.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'll agree to that.
It's a really unfortunate part about the ending is it literally feels like you finish a mission and like there's this momentum going and then suddenly you are done.
Which actually I think in light of like the past year's events, I think it's for Volition, it's a good thing that THQ died.
Yeah.
Because it gave, like, they got a new publisher and it gave them time to, like, they are at least putting a more effort into the game, polishing it up than would be if THQ wasn't still around.
That ending, without spoiling anything, was really dumb and in, like, the best way.
Like the rest of the game.
Yes, but it kind of came out of left field.
Are you talking about the
like literally fade to black and then suddenly
the red ending?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I haven't seen the other ending. I don't know if it's the same place. If it's the same thing.
That's the only thing I know of.
Anyway, I know it can't possibly be the same thing because the dude you fight may or may not be there depending on what you do. But yeah, that ending is really dumb and has some of the best quote best voice acting in a video game.
Nice.
I guess to be more generalized, the reason why I like Saints Row over other open world games, like, you know, say GTA. I recently bought GTA 4, and I was going to say that's what I've been playing, but I booted it up, and it's like, all right, fine. It's got, like, you have to log in, sort of like...
Oh, fuck, that process is horrible. It's genuinely horrible.
Oh my god! What's the detective open world game?
Oh,
Eleanor.
Yeah, Eleanor? like Eleanor. You have to, like, oh, I thought you had to log in to do any of the fancy DLC stuff. Forget that. No, you have to log in to Xbox Live
to save the game in
order to save the game. So I'm not doing any multiplayer. For single player, you have to do that, and I immediately just closed and uninstalled the game.
Yeah, that's what my first reaction was, but I had to go back. But the game is actually good, except you shouldn't play it on a PC. Don't play Grand Theft Auto on a PC. They don't fucking put effort into it. Just play it on a console.
So, hey, cousin.
Gods and Nakor, play your video game on consoles.
Let's go see the titties. So instead, I just started playing Saints Row the Third with a friend because they have co-op, and saving on a single player or co-op, multiplayer even, that you don't need to log into a special service for, which is great.
Yay!
Also, by the end of the game, I could not be killed. It was hilarious.
I actually liked
about it is like that game does what an open world game should do, and that is that it lets you do exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, it's a much more playgroundy approach to the open world thing. That like I have health, but it regenerates, and it's still a very well done approach to like presenting the whole idea of playing a video game.
Yeah,
it's a game.
It's actually interesting because like you mentioned like playgroundy, and I'm like, you know, that's actually kind of a good analogy because like where a lot of other sandboxy games are more like you are dropped into the middle of the Sahara Desert. And they just kind of say, all right, go. In this one, it's literally more of, you know, you are playing in the sandbox in this playground, and they give you all of the cool toys and cool laser guns with real working sounds and just let you play. Like, you are playing a video game with this game, and that's probably the best thing about it.
So, yeah, I guess without going too long into it, Cynic,
I don't know, man. Like, I'm
sure we'll talk a lot about this game in like 2 weeks.
I'm also probably like the only person in the world who loves Infamous and cannot stand any of these other like GTA, Red Dead Redemption, freaking Saints Row. I do not like any of those games. I don't know.
That's interesting.
I prefer Saints Row 2.
You like probably one of the most boring sandboxy games out there.
I fucking love Infamous 1 and 2 and 3's.
I haven't played 2 yet, and I did enjoy from what I played of 1. Mm. I did enjoy it, don't get me wrong, but in terms of what there is to do and what the game allows you to do,
I think that game
is incredibly restrictive.
Yeah, it's just really it's really restrictive, very directed. It's very like self-serious. Yeah. It's very self-serious.
It's an open world game.
It is incredibly restrictive in that it's PS3 only.
Yeah,
and I can't knock it, and I can't like give it props because I don't have that console. And maybe when Second Son comes out, I'll have a PS4. But
well, actually, no. I really love Assassin's Creed. That's also ultra directed. So I guess I like open world games that have like a through line to them, which doesn't make sense in some
like
ways.
Being
but
told what except to do, you don't you like Saints.
Yeah, I don't like Saints Row at all. Well, it's also free
like
in PlayStation Plus.
I think
so
Saints Row
2
is a better game than Saints Row 3.
All right, well, let's we've put enough topic in open world games, which are sort of like MMOs. We're still trying to keep tied with World 2,
not.
I guess.
No, we're not. We're totally off in our own direction now.
But yeah, well, anything else you've been up to this week? Or I think that's
me.
A pretty big week.
I played. So there's a bunch of new stuff on PlayStation Plus. I got what's his face? Need for Speed Most Wanted, last year's game.
I feel like we need to have like music, like the DSiWare stuff for the bomb tag.
Yeah, like every what time I played on PS Plus this week.
I don't know if I like that game. It's open world car games.
So I have to ask you. I've only played the PC version.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if this is like PC lag or basically okay. When you're playing on the PS3,
mm-hmm.
Does it seem like there's a bit of a latency between when you tell your car to turn and when it fucking turns?
I think those cars drive like trash.
Okay. Okay, so that wasn't just me then.
All right. Yeah, like I'm a guy who likes freaking Gran Turismo. Like I like proper. Well,
did you ever play Hot Pursuit?
No,
the new one.
I played the old one. I didn't play the new one.
See, I loved the new Hot Pursuit, the Criterion Hot Pursuit. I loved that game. I loved how it controlled, how the cars drove. But this Most Wanted, and granted, you know, I played Hot Pursuit on a console, so that's why I was asking if there was a difference, if you felt like there was a latency, because when I'm driving in Most Wanted, I feel like I have to anticipate the turn before I need to make the turn because there's a good like quarter second or so lag between when I put the control in and when the game actually recognizes it.
I don't think I have that. It's just I'm pretty sure I didn't have that. It was just mainly like the drifty nature of the cars, like just how I made a Porsche drift around most of the corners it went through, and that just felt wrong.
Okay, so you don't like the more arcadey kind of feel of it?
Well, I really love Ridge Racer, so I like arcade.
Ridge Racer is barely racing.
Yeah, and that game just
goes sideways to drift.
It's so good. so I like that kind of stuff. I just don't like this kind. It's like a midpoint between like normal, like full arcadey, like Ridge Racer, and just like.
Yeah, like you prefer to go one way or the other.
Yeah, one way or the other. And to be honest, I prefer Sim nowadays. And also Saints Row the Third is on PlayStation Plus. I'm picking that up now. But yeah, no, it was
okay.
It's okay.
See, maybe it's just for me. Like maybe I just need to turn my graphics down and then I'll enjoy it, because I actually like I love Criterion's games.
Right.
So I was really confused on why this game felt so shitty.
I really don't like that you have to go to a car to change cars. That sucks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can kind of teleport to that car.
Yeah, but then you're on the other side of the city, and it's just like.
Yeah, I agree. The weird part about that is that only is the case offline. If you're playing online multiplayer, you don't. You can swap cars whenever the hell you want to.
Oh, that's.
Or maybe it's the other way around. No, no, that's right.
It's the other way around. I don't know.
It's not the other way around.
Okay. Yeah, because I just didn't like the way that game worked. I didn't like the way the game
felt. There were some weird decisions they made. And I agree, like the open worldiness of it was really poorly implemented, I feel like.
Are we talking about Burnout Paradise?
No, kind of.
No, that was a good game.
Kind of.
Burnout Paradise was a good game. Need for Speed Most Wanted was probably the weakest Criterion racing game I've played so far.
Mm. Yeah.
And it also has police cars.
Still better than every other Need for Speed game that was not made by Criterion. Don't get me wrong.
The biggest surprise for me this week, also in PlayStation Plus, was freaking Lego Lord of the Rings, which is surprisingly cool.
Yeah, sometimes those Lego games are actually good.
See, I bought that during the Steam Summer Sale. I still haven't even loaded it up.
It's free for Vita right now. So I played it on my Vita, and it looks good in the Vita. And there's something about, because it's one-to-one the movie, like it's just going through how the movies approach the storyline. And just seeing, like, Lego dudes like casting the ring, or like about to cast a ring into the fires of Mordor, and then turning around, and then Lego what was his face, Elrond, going, "No, you fool!" And it was just the over just how dramatic it was, and the Lego, it's just so good. And I think that game definitively answers should Legos talk, and
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, not only just talk, but I love that they went the extra step and like straight up pulled the voice samples from the fucking.
It is 1-to-1. You have Galadriel speaking over the top.
It's
just
so there are points that are just so fucking dramatic.
Yeah.
And it's just these little cartoony guys, and then you see like somebody in the background like fucking tripping and falling down
into pieces, and it's just dumb.
Yeah,
it's really. Really great. I didn't play much more of it because again, like everything stopped once Tales of Xillia got to me. But I really liked like the first couple minutes of that. It just made me smile. It just made me smile and remember why I love those movies so much. Because, And then what's his face? Spec Ops: The Line was also free in PlayStation Plus. PlayStation Plus is just ridiculous. Like if you haven't realized, PS Plus is just ridiculous. And Saints Row the Third. So I'm gonna be trying, but I'm gonna try Saints Row the Third out again.
Definitely recommend Spec Ops: The Line.
And yeah, I'm going to try Spec Ops: The Line. So if I finish Tales of Xillia, I'll try this too.
8 hours, maybe.
Hmm.
If that, it's actually probably closer to 6.
I'm going to play it on easy. I'm going to play it on easy. So
I would actually, as somebody who didn't play it on easy, I would recommend playing it on easy.
Because it's a story oriented game.
Yeah.
No, because the gameplay is actually like subpar, but the story is great.
Cool. So I'll check that out as well. And that's it. That's Cynic's PlayStation Plus corner for the week. That's all. Oh, I've been reading a book.
We'll find out about that next week.
Yeah.
No. I want to hear about books. Books,
it's a fantasy book. You don't care.
All right.
Okay, I don't give a shit.
You get.
Okay. First of all, Sinek, you've been talking about Guild Wars for like an hour.
Uh-huh.
That was part of your scene. Like, and then we.
Welcome to the Cinecast, Giant Bomb Community's own self-confessed.
Yeah, we started with what I've been playing at the start of this episode, and we're still on it. If you're going to go by that.
You ready, folks? This is going to be a barn burner.
No. I'll talk about the book next week. It'll be fine.
Because I'm going to talk about a book.
So, Durin, what you been up to?
My segment is going to be much shorter because it turns out, other than maybe Saints Row, I haven't really played a lot of games. I played a little bit of the same game that I still can't talk about. Let's see. I'm basically playing the game of waiting for all the games that I want to play to come out. So like I'm really now that I finished Saints Row the Third, I'm really looking forward to Saints Row 4. Cannot wait for that to fucking come out. I was incredibly bummed to find out on Thursday that the Final Fantasy 14 beta phase 4 open beta thing
wasn't going
to start until next weekend. So I have to wait another week still to play that. And then I thought that I had a pretty good idea of everything that I wanted to play, to buy this coming holiday season. Mm-hmm. Until I saw that video of X Rebirth.
What? Why would you want to play a fucking X game? All right, that's not. I love X, but have you played an X game before?
No, I own X3, like all of the X3s. I haven't actually loaded any of them up because I was going to one day and somebody told me it's basically offline Eve.
It's nothing like Eve because, first of all, that's a lie, okay? Don't fall for that trick because Eve is like baby play compared to fucking X3. You just click where fucking ships go. X is just... You have to buy save points using in-game money, like insurance, unless you save on ships. It's great. I love it. And it's they don't babe you at all. The tutorial is literally like, here's how to fly. That's the tutorial. It's like a 30-second tutorial on how to dock and fly, and all of that is automated in the first place. So I don't
you know. Come to think of it, I did the tutorial, and then I stopped playing the game.
Right, because you realized how fucking impenetrable of a game it was, right?
But at least I got through the tutorial. That's more than I can say for Victoria 2.
Okay, that's because
I played through half the Victoria 2 tutorial, and then I stopped and messaged you and said, "Noob, I need you to walk me through this tutorial if I'm going to play this game."
How can you walk through that tutorial? It's click right. Come on. No, but the thing is, I got to a point in X3. I was about like 15 hours in. I've had my like first freighter ship. I made my first 1 million or whatever, and I was like getting my trade empire started. And within 10 minutes, I lost both of my freighter ship to like pirates, and then I quit the game forever. I don't plan on ever going back into X3.
But you know what? You don't have to, because now we'll have X Rebirth this holiday season.
It looks amazing.
God, that game looks so amazing.
X3 looks amazing. But whether or not it plays amazing, that's the question I'm waiting for. I want to know what it plays
like. One of the things that really sold me on it, it's maybe kind of a dumb thing, but that game has probably the best cockpit view ever.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I don't care. I don't care if it's super complex, whatever, like that. I'll learn because, goddamn it, that game looks amazing.
Do you think we'll see like a Drew stream of it?
It's just a wall.
A stream of X. I'd be more. I think it would be more likely that we saw a Dave stream of it.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. I'm all for Dave coming back.
Drew is definitely more of the simulation. He's more into the airplanes, helicopters, that kind of thing. Dave is definitely the space sim dude. Maybe a Vinny and Dave thing.
Because this is space sim as it gets. It's not even about flying. Oh, it's about becoming a space trillionaire.
Yeah.
And you have to do it minute by minute, and the time speed up thing doesn't help enough for you to... There's a built-in thing that accelerates time by 10 times, and you always have to use it. There's never a time where you're not using it.
The only thing that's missing, like, that would make this the perfect space sim that I've always wanted is... the ability to like fly into the atmosphere of a planet and land. Like this game has that.
That's never going to happen. Not in a lifetime.
There's a game actually that's being worked on. I believe it's just called Infinity right now, or Project Infinity.
Disney Infinity?
Yeah. That has that tech. But unfortunately, it's a very small team working on the game, so it's never going to fucking come out. But they've shown video of it actually, like, of going from space to atmosphere to landing, and it happens. Like, it can be done. They just need to actually create the fucking game for it.
Crazy.
Anything
else you've been up to, Dern?
No, that's pretty much been it. Just like,
I just want a freelancer. That's better.
I know there's a shitload of good games coming out this year. While you were doing that, I was looking up. I booted up Tales of Xillia, and I'm now mining. And...
My pre-order cost for the next, or for August, for the rest of August, is already over $100.
Well, what's everyone picking up? What's everyone's list here?
I've already decided I'm going to have to get Pikmin.
Okay.
Not for me, but because at this point, I think my son has watched every Pikmin video on the Wii U at least 3 or 4 times, if not more.
I was going to make a jab that you needed to buy it for Nintendo, but...
Yeah, that too.
It's kind of awesome that your kid likes it.
So I'm definitely picking that up and Saints Row. That's going to be pretty much it for August, though.
August. You're probably right. But like for the rest of the year, what do we... Before the new consoles, that being the cutoff mark, what's everyone looking forward to?
Pokemon in October.
Yep.
You know, honestly, without seeing a list of games, I don't remember when things are coming out because the new consoles have kind of screwed up my general plan and idea of like game releases.
Right. You know, giantbomb.com has a way to see that. You use giantbomb.com/
but it's only like a couple months.
Hyphen games.
It's only a couple months. That really annoys me. They used to do the whole year, but now they're just only the first couple months, next couple months, which sucks. But no, like just freaking Disgaea. There's a new Disgaea game coming out, which is actually a direct sequel to the first Disgaea for the first time ever. And I cannot wait for that game. It's called Disgaea D2, A Brighter Darkness. It's going to be awesome.
Fatal Frame 2 is coming out as a PS2 classic on PSN.
What Fatal
that
Frame?
That is absolutely picking up. Fatal Frame 2.
That's kind of cool. Yeah.
Pretty much the best frame.
Sure.
Rome 2, Total War, September 3rd.
Oh, God. Words of Radiance might be coming out this year.
Rome 2, Total War.
Anyway. Yeah, this is just a bunch of stuff. Assassin's Creed. I don't know if I'm going to pick up Assassin's Creed.
Pirates. Like Pirates of the Caribbean.
No, I'm going to buy it. I just don't know which platform I'm going to buy it on. I might buy it way for next
year. Mario Dream Team. I'll also be picking that up most likely.
Fucking Nintendo.
Because those games are great. God. Is anybody going to be picking up the Bureau XCOM Declassified?
I'm going to wait for reviews.
Looks horrible. It looks like ass.
It looks like XCOM Enemy Unknown done from a third person view.
Really? It looks like the XCOM game nobody is waiting for.
Well, and a 3-person team instead of a 5-person team.
A lot of people seem to think it looks really cool. Like it's supposedly
reminds me it feels like from like the quick look EX, I think is what it's called. The developer one and then just like a couple other videos I've seen. It looks like an old THQ game called Freedom Fighter.
Oh, Freedom Fighter is awesome, though.
Well, I never said it was bad. I still got the disc for that. I played every now and then. an old game called Freedom Fighter. But instead of like 15 people, you just get 2, but you have a ton of abilities.
That's cool. That sounds awesome.
Like it's like a modern day. Like it's all about crouching back and forth. But you end up you're still having to be in combat. But you can't be solo in combat. You have to. You know, they're really pushing that team element of it,
right? So it's kind of like the Mass Effect single player, but if you actually played it tactically as opposed to just shooting dudes.
Having not played any of the Mass Effects, yes.
Okay.
I've tried getting into them, but now it's just a badge of honor. It's like, yep, never played those games.
Right.
Damn. It's like the people who haven't watched Star Wars.
No. If 3 was as good as 2, then maybe it would have been
I watched that. Zachary Quinto did a really good job.
No. You're thinking...
I hate... Well done. Well done, sir.
And that's the last episode of Durin on the podcast. wish him well in the salt mines.
I don't know. I hate Nintendo. He hates Star Wars. I think it balances out.
No, actually, I don't hate Star Wars. I guess it's just too easy of a joke.
Well, I do hate
trying
Nintendo,
to move this along, because I really don't want this to be too long of an episode. Noob Rama, what you been up to?
Yo, what's up? I guess you asked me first.
Wolverine was bad, and...
Let me talk about Wolverine, because I have complaints about Wolverine.
Wolverine was cool. Right. I like Wolverine.
First of all,
okay,
it started out by making...
Are we spoiling? We shouldn't spoil.
It's not. Well, it's not a spoiler. Mm. Is it like talking about the very first scene? Is that a spoiler? Because that's in the description of the movie.
I don't remember the first scene.
Do your best to
with the Japanese. With the Japanese.
Do you hate it just because it's historically inaccurate?
That's what I was going to go on and say. If you don't want to hear it, then I guess it's fine.
You know what? I haven't heard that perspective yet, so go ahead. I don't know.
Okay, first of all, So the first scene, it's not a spoiler because it's in all of the descriptions for the movies in all of the theaters. It basically, it's like, it's back in 1945. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about how it's also inaccurate in the comic book version, because it, and then it's like, it's in Nagasaki. So Nagasaki was the second atomic bombing of Japan 2 days after the first atomic bombing at Hiroshima.
Yeah.
Oh, and
funny story about the bombings about that, like, bombings? Well, no, I'm going to mispronounce the guy's name, but Tsutsumiya Yamaguchi. Mm-hmm. I'm going to link this in the Skype chat, make you guys try and pronounce
the
it.
The guy who survived both?
Yeah, the unluckiest man in the world. Have you heard about that?
Well, Tsutsumiya Yamaguchi?
Like the double survivor. There's more of them. It's not just him.
I thought he's the longest living one, isn't he? He lived to 90.
Yeah.
I'm sure. The rest.
Long story short, he was in the first city, hopped on a train later that day to Nagasaki, and then was there for the second one.
Yeah.
Right.
That really sucks.
That is shit. That's not a funny story.
That's weird. That's not a funny story at all.
Horrible. That's horrible. Oh, no. But again, so it takes place in Nagasaki, and the scene cuts to a Japanese prison camp of Americans. That's where the first thing is wrong. No Americans died in the bombing of Nagasaki, as far as we know. I've confirmed that by reading sources. And secondly, they just released the American prisoners. That's not what they would have done. Do you think that's what they would have done, Cynic?
Were there other American prisoners there? I only saw Wolverine.
I mean, shortly after they did
we're gonna set them free and then we're gonna slit our bellies.
I thought they did the unconditional surrender thing.
Hmm. Right, and so they let. They just let the no. This was way before the surrender. And then they just let those guys go. And thirdly, why would they're not emaciated? Because American soldiers, helped by the Japanese, are generally emaciated. And fourthly,
are you trying to say emaciated?
Are
you trying to say emaciated or emancipated?
Yeah, I keep on getting those words bunched up together.
And say it fourthly, again.
I'm pretty sure you said emaciated.
Yeah.
Emaciated.
I don't know what that word means. I know what emaciated means.
You guys are dick.
She's malnourished and just skinny. Worn.
And you're
no, that honestly didn't bother me nearly as much as his pronunciation of Nagasaki.
Nagasaki.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Manic. And Wolverine is Canadian. He would have fought with the Canadian forces, so he would have never been in Japan in the first place. That would have never happened. And I was just angry. And then the rest of the movie was mediocre because it was fucking boring.
If you agree with Noob Rama, more power to you. But I thought that movie was pretty great. I don't know.
That train fighting scene was fucking dope.
Dope, right? It was great. It was great. Dope. And the dude with the bow before he became evil was awesome. It's obvious. Don't worry.
There was no fighting.
Right, that's the last episode of the Lincoln Cast with Cynic on it. I do not wish you.
Oh, spoilers for Wolverine.
Send you to the freaking salt mines.
What else?
Read some books, played some games.
Yeah, I've been playing the Skyrim DLC. Crossbows are pretty cool.
Is that the new one that the guy made? Is it like a job application or?
DLC.
Okay.
Ones you buy. And my pre-order list for August is currently Rome 2, Total War, Europa 3 or 4, which I still haven't pre-ordered in papers, please. It's like 160.
I'm sorry. And Dive Kick, right?
No.
When does that come out?
The 20th? I plan on buying, what is it called? Skullgirls looks really good.
Wait, this month, the 20th?
I think so. Let me double check.
I keep forgetting. I'm gonna get that on PSN.
So, Shinboy was talking about, like Hearts of Iron 3, standard fare, playing as New Zealand, annexed Albania, etc. And I guess my final point is I've been reading a book, Autobiography of British Comedian David Mitchell, and it is quite funny. And if you know him, it's a very good book to read.
That's a contrast from David Mitchell, who is not. No, he's all right.
Burn.
He's a decent comedian.
I don't know.
I like David. Peep Show is one of my favorite shows. So,
very good week though.
I saw Wolverine.
All right. Yeah.
Is that all we've got?
I've had a pretty quiet week.
I want to talk about a different book I read, but it's history and it's boring. But I will say, like, it's the best history book about World War II ever.
Okay, now you have to say the name.
All right, it's called Army at Dawn. I think I talked about the prequel, but it's sort of like one of those books. Because the problem with history books, especially like memoirs, is it can get way too personal and you lose sight of the bigger things happening around the character that the book is set around. So if it's like an autobiography, you generally see like the day-to-day experience of the soldier in the front, and it's sort of it gives more of a personal view, but at the same time all of the other things around it, so like the greater picture of the war and what that meant for the war, is sort of lost because it's been replaced with the personal stories. But this book does like a magnificent job of, while staying personal, it doesn't lose sight of the books or like the entire war and the and what's going on around the world, because it sort of jumps from character to character every couple words. And as in, like, it just looks at, you know, random diary pieces of different soldiers from both sides of the war, and it sort of intermixes them together to tell a very, very good narrative that gets you emotionally attached with people you read about in one paragraph. And I think it's a great book, and I highly recommend it.
So what was this called again? Who's it by?
Army Done by Rick Atkinson.
Cool.
Part of a trilogy called The Liberation Trilogy.
I'll happily not read it because fuck historical stuff. I don't know. I'm a heathen.
Fantasy. It's bad.
Yeah, I'm a fantasy geek. I don't know.
You're a fantasy. Oh, and Project Reality. All right, fucking awesome thing happened in Project Reality.
No, we didn't move on. This is getting okay.
This is really quick. This is one short story. So I'm playing as the insurgents, and I hop onto just like a civilian car. I can start blasting like Arabic music because that's one of the things you can do in civilian cars. It's just going
and then, is that your impression of Arabic music?
Yeah, sure. And then I come across an alleyway, and I just hear, because there's, you can talk when you talk to teammates, everyone can hear it. It's because it's like a realistic video game. I just hear like people talking about like moving across. So I go in this alleyway, drive straight through, and I just run over an entire squad of like British soldiers, and I could hear them vividly screaming, "Holy shit, what the fuck is going on?" That was an extremely exciting moment. And if you want to play Project Reality, you should probably play Project Reality.
But that's like, Battlefield's only like, what, $20 now on Steam or something?
$20 on Steam.
Yeah, I had $20, but I spent that on Papers, Please, and Gunpoint.
Oh, shit. Which of those have you played?
Neither? Okay, here's the thing. I got paid today, bought it today, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to play these games as like the pre-stream thing before the show starts. And instead, I was like, hey, guys, we should probably run around in Guild Wars. So I will be playing those later this week, and I'm excited for it because what I've seen so far, Papers, Please, is amazing. Please.
It's fucking awesome. I played the Papers, demo. Please.
I can't wait to talk about it.
It's a really good, it's a good game, but man, it is stressful.
It's almost like that Cook Serve Delicious game in terms of like gameplay, right? It's
but it's much more
observational.
It's completely observational. Oh, the reason it's depressing and stressful in the same way that Cart Life is.
Yeah, the game is not meant to be enjoyed. It's like a very dark humor.
Well, it's I guess depending what type of for Durin, he's getting more immersed in the storyline of like, okay, I gotta get this stuff done. Whereas Noob is just like, oh yeah, I can't wait to detain this guy. Yeah,
it's not even that. I guess we should describe the basic premise is you're basically a border official who checks passports and lets people through in this sort of Eastern European police state of like Azerbaijan or Azfakistan or whatever. And
I believe the correct term is Farafistan.
Farafistan. Okay. That's not the actual name of it. And you're checking border officials.
I think.
Yeah. And basically the premise is that you've won the October lottery and then you've been placed in this glorious job position as a border guard official, but you don't get paid jack shit and you have a family to feed. And how the game works is the more people you let past through, the more money you earn. So you get money per head. And the point is you have to get as many people through and they'll throw things in like, oh, you have to double check their identity. You have to check if they're carrying concealed weapons. And if as you make mistakes, you get, you know, points off and you get money off. And the the sinister part of it is, of course, you're getting paid very little, and your family sometimes, like, you have two children, I believe, and like a wife to support, and like, and you have to pay rent in this, like, I assume, a rundown apartment, and your kids can often get sick if they're getting not enough food, so you have to pay for their food, you have to pay for the rent, and you have to sort of manage between doing a good job as at the same time getting as many people through in the most efficient way. And of course, the people that come through would do things like offer you with bribes in sort of like without having the proper documentation, and your character has to, and you have to decide whether or not this is worth it and if it's worth getting caught and things like that. And it's
there's other game elements that, like, a story will progress, but people will just straight up, like, either jump the fence or, like, just try and kill the guards, basically like terrorist attacks. And let's say you're trying to plan out the day of, like, I got to get eight or nine, like, you know, processes done to pay these bills and keep my family alive and well fed and all that. And then a terror strike happens, shuts the border down after you've done like three processes.
Right.
So you get, like, you were pissed off at the terrorists because you did not make enough money to feed your family.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's one of those games that can wear you down in multiple ways.
It snowballs into just in, like,
and that's so where, like, much craziness. Came from is it yeah. is definitely, it's not a game that's enjoyed, it's experienced.
Yeah, but it's also really enjoyable. I think there's a lot of elements. See, the thing about Cart Life is it's more of a life simulator, whereas Papers, Please is more of a game. Like, you're actually just pretty much playing it the whole time. And it's like essentially a matching game. You're matching information and stuff like that. So it's like, for me personally, I don't find that era or, like, setting or even, like, the world it portrays particularly interesting. But really? The actual,
that's the,
like,
exact opposite.
I know, right? But for me, it's actually the basic, like, the actual gameplay of it that I really find fun. Because having done a bunch of, like, stupid ability testing for job interviews and shit recently, I actually find that I really enjoy, like, spatial recognition, like, matching and that kind of stuff. It's kind of cool. I definitely want to check it out, so I'm probably buying it next week. I'm so happy that game's out. Like, it's been around forever, but it's finally out, so it's cool.
Yeah, and the other game I picked up and plan to play is Gunpoint, which it's a lot of people have talked about it. I'm sure I will go into depth about it after I've played it, but one thing I just want to cover that I wish more games would do, and the only other game I know to have done it is Half-Life 2, was basically you have an option to pay a little bit more money, which Half-Life 2 didn't do this, but you get, like, a soundtrack and all this other stuff, but you also get his commentary about making the game with each level.
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome. Like, Portal did that as well. And it's so much. It's, I love director's commentary stuff. It's really cool.
Yep. And that is an awesome thing that, like, that would be a good pre-order bonus.
I would pay double for The Last of Us with director's commentary. I want Neil Druckmann all over that. And, you know, the coolest thing I've purchased in that terms is the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the special extended editions, because all, like, 10 hours of or 12 hours of that has, like, four commentary tracks. And it's, like, the most entertaining, some of the most entertaining DVD experiences I've ever had in my life, because... Oh, and I would love that for games. Oh, man. I think we'll get there. I think we'll get there eventually. Like, maybe even next gen. It could be a case where games, like, collector's editions have commentary tracks. That would be great.
I don't think most gamers would give a shit. That's the problem.
But most people don't give a shit about DVD commentaries either. It's just, like, a thing. Like, a reason to get a collector's edition rather than just...
Right.
Yeah, DLC. I mean, like, I think it depends on the game. Like, obviously, I don't think we'll see it with, like, Call of Duty or Assassin's Creed.
Mm. But I think they're pretty vain enough. Like,
I think majority of the games, at least, I enjoy. I think it would be hilarious to see a Saints Row commentary.
Yeah, that would be cool. Or it could be disappointing, really, like, if they're not as interesting as their, like, material.
I'd like to think, like, if they pick the right people, just have Nolan North do, like, commentary once.
Yeah. Like, all the time, the actors are really great things to have as commentary, because they can actually tell you what they, how they did it, what they were going through, that kind of stuff, especially if they do performance capture for those games.
It's just trying to find that right. If we can get a steady streamline of games that have a good way of presenting it, because unlike movies, which you can just, like, just start to finish it. Mm-hmm. They're like, obviously you have to have some method of triggering it in a convenient fashion, I guess.
Yeah, and how Portal does it, there used to be like these just floating orbs you walk up to. And as soon as you go up to it, I think you just hit E and it starts playing the track. And it's just like a pre-canned thing. Like, obviously they cannot make direct like tracks which respond to what you're doing in the game, because that's not possible. But there's definitely like ways for them to talk about a specific area or a checkpoint and that kind of stuff. I'd love to see that stuff in games.
And then I guess to a nod to what Noob was playing with the radio in the car, what I did was using it like with our podcast, I have a couple like virtual audio cables set up, which basically just means a second output for sound. I managed to set up so I just could play old music from like the Vietnam era of like war and like Bird is the Word and just a bunch of other dumb tracks that basically would be blaring on like Good Morning Vietnam.
Fuck yeah.
And got in a helicopter in Arma 3 and just started blaring that as the pilot.
That's awesome.
So like we're heading to the AO to like land these guys and Fortunate Son is just blasting.
That's cool. Is there like an archive.org like thing of all the stuff they used to play in, for example, Good Morning Vietnam? Like, that's one of those things I wish was preserved.
Those songs would still be copyrighted, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they're still like it's you'd have to acquire them or purchase them.
But just the skits and stuff. Because there is a bunch of radio recordings of London, especially a bunch of stuff from London during that period. I would love to hear like equivalent radio recordings from what the soldiers used to hear, that kind of stuff on archive.
I'm sure somebody somewhere has it, and hopefully they have ways to making that available to the public.
I'm going to look for that.
Yeah, I guess this more or less covers just what we've all been playing. Mm-hmm. There's one last thing I just want to talk about that happened this week. That was I watched a new thing on GameSpot, which was done by Danny O'Dwyer, who's basically he grew up as part of the Giant Bomb community and GameSpot community, and he now works for them. But it's this weird show called The Point where he talked about something that I thought would be a good discussion topic,
mm-hmm.
That has some ties to what everyone's been up to in the past week or month or whatever. That's basically why do we play games that we don't enjoy?
I kind of want to say before that, I think Danny, not only do I think Danny's one of the coolest guys in the business, but I think that The Point is a kind of an interesting step for games journalism in general. Because if you watch it, there's like images of him in college and stuff. It's a very personal thing he's putting out there. Like it's almost like it's up there with like Patrick's videos or like that I Love Mondays he did that he just showed like some of the stuff he has around him in his new house, like now that he's living with his family again. It's like really like ultra personal stuff between you and the journalist, but in like the remotest relation to games. And I think it's really cool, and I think people out there should check it out because he's really awesome. But yes, the topic.
It'll be in the show notes. Yeah, mm-hmm. If you go to GameSpot.com, you just search for The Point, and it's like probably one of the first hits. But yeah, like, well, that was my big takeaway from it of like, why do we play games that we don't enjoy or what have you? Whether it be we're just waiting for a good game to come out and we just don't have anything to play. Was there any big thing you took away from the video? It's like a 4-minute video, but
the only thing I really like, I guess I'll say a positive and negative because I don't want to just say negative because I feel like I have come off a little bit mostly negative throughout this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it did bug me how much he threw WoW under the bus as some kind of a scapegoat for his lack of a social life or what he deemed a social life. I feel like in this age, what a social life is or can be much different than what would be considered the norm. But aside from that, as to like the point of, you know, playing games that we don't like, I think that like that's definitely, you know, that's valid for definitely a lot of us. We don't necessarily enjoy every minute of the MMOs that we play, for sure. But I think it's the satisfaction of getting better at something where, especially, you know, a lot of us work jobs that we don't like. And you know, we play video games to kind of escape that, and whether it be relaxing or just, you know, spending time with other people or what have you. I think that we play video games that we don't like, whether they be competitive or cooperative or a mix of the two in the case of an MMO, just to get kind of that, like I said, I guess I almost feel like it's a thing calling back to like our childhood of like a recognition for the accomplishments that we've done that you don't necessarily really get in the adult life. Like, yeah, if you do a good job at your job, most times your boss is just going to pass you on the back. No reaction. Or no reaction at all, because you did your job. You know, good job. What do you want? Whereas in video games, you do a good job and the game rewards you for it. And a lot of times the people you're playing with, unless you're playing Call of Duty, will, you know, applaud you for, you know, doing such a great job, or some people will.
If you're to work like in a competitive shooter, you see the scoreboard and everyone can see how well you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Do that in
like it's, I agree with you that it was interesting that he, like basically gave WoW as an example of like needing to break away from a game. For me, it was League. It became too much of a volatile thing, and I just kept asking myself, like, why am I playing this constantly? I need to stop. And I just I tried focusing on a lot of other games. With WoW, it's for me. I had a thought, I lost it. I really enjoyed like some of the community aspects, and one of the things to your point of like, I love going into a battleground and not fighting or anything, but just trying to get everyone to work together to do something, a lot like running a raid, and getting the feedback from people saying like, hey, nice job. Wait, like, thanks. Helped a lot, and I enjoyed it. But it definitely felt like, oh, I'm kind of wasting my time here. This game's been out for like 5 years. I could have been through college by now.
So I don't do this. I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing, because what I do kind of instead...
You're the control in this experiment.
Yeah, because I instead of all this, I tend to just like reread books I love, or it's like when I don't have anything I want to do, I usually go back into the back catalog, or try something new I haven't done before, or like try something really old that I want to re-experience. I don't really sit there and play games that I don't like consistently enjoy. Like, was this the only time I can say that it was similar to this is something that's very similar to what Danny illustrates in his video, which was like in high school, all of my friends played Guild Wars 1. It was the game we played. We went to school, we talked about Guild Wars 1, we talked about GVG, we talked about PvP, our build, so on and so forth. And I played that game like 2,500 hours over the course of like a year and a half or something, or maybe 2 years. But that was the only thing that was similar to it. But I didn't play that game and not have fun. I would just end up sitting there in like a public area chatting on the game, because the game essentially just became a chat room for my friends to play, which just happened to have monsters to kill at the same time. But beyond that, like ever since, I don't do this. Like for example, Guild Wars 2, I play that game with there's new stuff out. I go in, I jump in, I have a look around, look at the new stuff, then get out. Or if there's new PvP stuff, I go in, play a couple rounds, then leave. I don't really go back to it as often as I thought I would for A or B. I don't feel like the need to go back to it or the desire to go back to something I've kind of done with. I just tend to do new stuff all the time. Like, do you think there's an element of people being like comfortable with a specific game that it just enables them to just switch off, and that's why they go back? Or is it like, because for me, from my perspective, it's just like, why don't you just try new things? Like, why, for example, is there a game that you just go back to, or there's something like you zone out to, and why don't you just try something new instead? Or Thurbleton, for example.
Actually, for me, the game that I would go back to and just to zone out and play would actually be WoW.
Right.
Like, I do go back to that game generally once a year at least, and even going so far as buying the fucking expansions because I'm dumb like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and that I'll go in there and I will just, you know, queue up for dungeons and just kind of veg while playing. Like, that's – I'm not really, like, enjoying my time necessarily, but I'm passing the time and – listening to music while I do it, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, it is weird when you really think about it.
Yeah, because like, why? Because I know you're not much of a reader, but you could do stuff. Like, I don't know why you do that. I don't understand like the drive for it. Like, Thurbleton, can you tell me why? Why do you do this? Why did you play League of Legends while you didn't enjoy it?
Well, for League, like the reason for League and the reasons for WoW are two similar but different ones. Like, I guess the best way to describe League is how Danny, I think Danny might have been somebody from another podcast, did it. But basically, it's like a drug in that, like, the high you get from a really good game is a lot of fun. And, like, it's when I first started getting into that game, and WoW 2 was back when I lived in Indiana. I had, like, 40-some-odd friends who all play video games, and so there was like 20 of us who played League. We'd all get together and do like a 10-on-10 LAN or a 5-on-5 LAN. And right. That is an awesome experience. And occasionally you get sort of that stuff in just a single opt-in multiplayer match. But that was like 2% of the time sort of thing. And it's a pretty good scale of like there's the middle of the row, which is just like okay games, and there's really shitty games. And it's just – I finally got – like had less and less of the good stuff with my friends, and it's just like, okay, I need to get away from this.
So it's kind of like gambling.
Yeah.
It's gambling with your time.
Yeah. And just getting raging at people. Whereas with WoW, I made a friendship with that. It is a much more social aspect of just chatting with people while occasionally killing bad guys.
Right.
And Guild Wars has become sort of that too, where it's all check in, but a lot of it is just to chat with people, to talk with people I've met over the different zones and whatnot through various adventures. And it's like, I don't know. I did a little bit of that with the dungeons and just like what Durin would do of just rolling up that sweet Lady H of World of Warcraft and doing a dungeon, maybe having a good time, hoping it's not crap.
Yeah.
Nowadays I have gotten to the point like where you're at of wanting to just like, I should try out new games, try out like the indie scene has helped out a lot with that and the resurgence of it.
Like Patrick also kind of got me into this mindset. I used to only do this with books and now I do it with games as well, which is like we find ourselves in a space where you only play the games you like. And there is a very good argument for going out and trying new games. Like, for example, I never had any intention of playing Need for Speed, like Most Wanted. But I know a lot of people out there like Burnout and that kind of game. And personally, I don't. And I wanted to at least give it another shot to see if like this game rubbed me a different way, or maybe I'd really love it, even though I haven't liked games like it. Sure, it didn't work out, but and it was free, so it was a particular circumstance. But I think there's a good argument for going out there and trying new things. And it's really weird for me seeing arguments such as this one for playing games that you don't particularly enjoy, because my stance on it has been and always will be, just don't. Like, your time is worth more than that. You should be doing, or I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I would suggest that you do interesting stuff or new stuff with that time rather than vegging out. And I know a lot of people out there do play Guild Wars 2 that way. A lot of people out there do just like do their dailies. They just run around, and some people don't even have guilds. I'm not sure how many people listening to this are like that. Maybe you don't have a guild. Maybe you just run around and just use Guild Wars 2 as a stress reliever, as a way to turn your brain off. And if you're like that, I would encourage you to try out. Maybe it's some games we mentioned in this show. Like we mentioned a lot. Maybe it's news books, even though I wouldn't read them myself because they sound boring. Or just like
you're
new-
boring.
Or a movie.
I guess one thing I do want to add that might be a good counterpoint for why people do this. It's good money versus time, often with the free-to-play aspect of it, even of like people would say, oh, well, it's all you do is sit in front of the computer playing this WoW game. Well, I'm doing it with like one or two friends and it costs $15 a month versus going out and like and doing stuff.
True. And gaming is a really expensive hobby. Like if like Dota 2 and League of Legends are new resurgences of free-to-play games that are particularly good and are huge time sinks. And definitely like open up this argument for there are these games that are free, and I think that's a good... The fact that they're free is a kind of like excuse to play them. But I'd also argue that there are other free games out there. There are a lot of great iOS free games. There's World of Tanks. There's a couple of other like free games on PC that not as many... There's a big amount of games out there that maybe you want to try out with your time and you'll enjoy for short periods of time that you may want to try as well. And sticking to specific games might not be the best way.
During a noob, would you say that some of it is wagering like money versus time and enjoyment versus time? But do you think a lot of people wager quality versus time? Like it's
The way you put it? Free games are shit. Absolutely. Free games.
Free people. Well, I would say, like, prior to the last few years, free-to-play games were absolute shit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You could play
like, you did not play free-to-play games unless you were a 14-year-old kid living at home who didn't get an allowance.
I'm not just talking about free-to-play games, but just, like, people, like, when they give reasons for why they play WoW or League or Dota even or whatever game, and it's always like, well, it costs this much versus this much time reward, and... Is the quality versus the time and the money worth it
for what we've been doing? I don't know.
Worth it? I would say yes. I don't think that's the reason why people do it. I think it's a good I don't want to say excuse because that's sounds kind of negative and I'm not meaning it to be, but it's a good side effect. People definitely do it for other reasons, but at the same time, the fact that it can save you so much money. Kind of like what I was talking about before the podcast when we were on the subject, and I mentioned people talk about how it ruins their social life and everything. Well, I mean, maybe I'm just different than a lot of people, but I felt like it was a different kind of social life, but it was still a social life. I would still spend my time. I wasn't spending my time alone while I played the game. I was on, Vent or TeamSpeak or what have you with a pretty large group of people generally pretty much every time I played.
I'll agree to that. Like, it's definitely it's got social things, but when like people ask, "Oh, how was your weekend? What'd you do?" I'm like, "Oh, I play a lot of Guild Wars, but I don't remember any of it. We did two things," or I could say like, "Oh, well, I tried out two indie games that like cost $10 or something." Like that's like telling my friends, "Hey, I played this game where I was a possibly Russian customs official." Will be a much better conversation starter than, "Oh yeah, I." Like did a dungeon.
See, I've got the solution to everybody here. I think this will be a good cap for this conversation because we are going a little longer than we meant to.
Mm-hmm.
If you have free time, you want to just veg rather than jumping into an MMO and doing your dailies and just grinding out like that. Just go check out saltybet.com.
I knew it.
Where you can watch Garfield fight Spawn.
Or to pick up another Giant Bomb plug, it would be, what's his face? Hardcore History, the podcast. It's actually pretty good. I checked out some episodes in the last couple of days. Not bad. Brad is not
Spawn
wrong.
Are tied.
Set up Salty Bets. Oh, that website, that thing's just crazy. That exists.
So that is plug. What are the rest of ours?
Yeah, oh, we wanted to plug, I believe we've done it before, but rainwave.cc, like water falling and just like ocean waves. Do you want to explain what, just briefly what that is and how you found out about it, Senek?
You showed me it, but it's essentially an internet radio site, but it actually plays good music that you probably either haven't heard before or...
Before you immediately say, just dismiss it, it is internet radio in the sense of no commercials, nobody, you're listening to rainwave.cc here on WXG5.
Yeah.
Coming up next, Ready Ready Piper now.
It's I'm not sure if it's legal, but it had 8-bit remixes or just straight up rips of Pokemon music on there and Mega Man music on there. And just there's a Chiptunes channel and the Chiptunes plays are actually good. And it's it seems really good. It seems really solid. And there's a lot of music on there that aren't chiptunes as well. So I haven't tried them out, but it seems like at least a decent thing to try out. So
yeah, it's it. All you need is like Adobe Flash and working ears.
Yep. It's browser based, so you don't have to download anything. Just play it. It's cool. Yeah.
I guess we already like plugged the spot. GameSpot.com is fine.
Mm-hmm.
GiantBomb.com. It's a website about video games. You can see games coming out.
Mm-hmm. Salty Bet, which we did.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Noob, anything you'd like to plug?
Nothing.
Giant Bomb PC, Gaming Hub. Chat with those guys.
Army of Dawn. Rick Atkinson.
And I'm going to plug, what's his face? Let me see what the name of this book is. Warbound, book 3 of the Grimnar Chronicles by Larry Correa. It's really good.
And once again, twitch.tv/Thurbleton. I didn't throw a lot of stuff up for this episode, but I don't know. I'm tired.
What are we at? What time are we at? This is going way long. It's only 2 hours. We're not doing too badly, but okay. There's going to be more. Oh, yeah. And for people that know, I'll probably be putting Shinboy's recording either before or after this. Oh, God.
It'll just probably come up a day later. We should probably discuss this after recording.
We'll see.
I feel.
Well, let's discuss this after we've seen what he's done.
Yes, what abomination he has created, which you can probably see live with video content on twitch.tv/shimboy630.
Yeah, but that's not going to go in the plugs, because fuck that guy.
All right, thank you for listening to the Lincoln Cast. Sorry we couldn't keep it all on Guild Wars 2 topic. I'm not sorry.